Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Hi, this is Ann Neal, the Master Builder, helping you to build a stronger, better life, and we are sharing my investing story. And I, Ann Neal, and myself are very excited to be sharing another portion of my investing story.
Mark Parks is a CPA, he's also an MBA, and I was introducing him, not realizing what an awesome author he also is,
on the subject of investing, but he's going to tell you his own story as we begin to share with you. And I know, I'm not sure what's going on, but we just lost the show. So I just noticed that it just went off. I've not had this happen before with Mark and everybody who's listening. If all of you can just bear with us.
You are muted.
Now, this is for you're referring to Blog Talk?
No, I'm referring to Facebook.
Do
you see Facebook Live?
I don't remember seeing it up at the top from the beginning.
You don't see it anymore, right?
I didn't see it from the beginning.
So we're going to turn the show over to you, and we are going to continue. We do have some people who are joining us live in the studio on the radio, so we want to thank all of you for joining us live, but we also have a lot of people joining who are here inside of Zoom.
All right, and we are live. Hi, this is Ann McNeil, the master builder who can lead you to a stronger life and business. And Ione and I are very excited to be volunteers with the Better Investing Organization, which is an organization for educational purposes, which teach how to analyze stocks and how to invest. Every Wednesday, we have been fortunate to bring to you a special guest sharing their investing story. Now, even though the show is called My Investing Story, our guests are here to share their story, and our guest today is none other than Mark Park. And I had the pleasure of meeting Mark, maybe a couple years ago, at City Side, and just having a conversation. Had no idea the power that he wielded in his brain about investing and money. But let me just tell you a little bit about who he is. Mark Park Jr. is a CPA and an MBA. He is also the best-selling author of The Gift, and we're going to talk about that. The book is about the extension gap, money and investment for women. Now, men can listen in, but Mark is a transformational speaker who makes complex topics simple. And I can attest to that. We had a participant with our investment club during our education meeting, and Mark shared a lot of information that made all of us think. And I was also the one, this was before, this is my day, everybody gives the gift for Christmas in our club, and also in company, that was my gift to them, and we want to thank you for your gift to us. So with that being said, I'm going to introduce everybody to my co-host,
who is none other than Ione McNeil, baby, and she's going to start us off with our first question. We're going to ask everybody to please put on your seatbelt, please get a pen, and please get a paper,
And please make note of the questions that I ask you to share your comments and share your questions. And if you're on Facebook Live or if you're listening on the video and you'd like to participate in the conversation, please give us your chat. And if you're listening live on Zoom, let us hear from you in the chat. We're going to have a challenge at the end, and we're going to share a lot of information. We want to make sure that you are able to participate. And so,
Thank you.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Great, how are you?
Good. I'm glad you got your background because I brought the book out just in case you weren't ready. But the first question I really want to ask, because I did a similar thing with a few of my single women friends, I bought a few copies of the book and gave it to them because as I started reading your book, I really enjoyed the format. The short story, the conversational tone, the consideration of what saved life, different women are in, single, married, divorced, single parent, just a lot of different situations that can color or inform how you make decisions or even what the next best step is. So could you actually take us back to your original inspiration for writing the book? So the original inspiration was actually my sister. So my sister is seven years older than I am. My sister is very educated.
She's always been very successful. And I always had this person who I could just, basically whatever she did, if I did that, then I knew I was going on the right track. So she went to college, I went to college. She joined the sorority, I joined the fraternity. When she finished college, she started working, she went and got her master's degree. Years later, I got my master's degree. So I always kind of just said, whatever she does, I'll just do that. And It got to a point where I became a financial advisor. And my sister was actually the first person I went to without my manager. Once you become a financial advisor, you have this manager who takes you out. They actually do the presentation for a while until you are comfortable doing it on your own. Well, he was kind of busy. So, I just decided that I was going to venture out on my own. And I made an appointment with my sister. And the first question was, tell me about your portfolio. And my sister said, I don't have a portfolio. And again, she made a lot of money, very successful, educated. And I said, okay, why not? She said, well, investing is not my thing. I'm an educator. And that's what I'm into. I said, well, how come you didn't get a financial advisor? And she said, well, I don't know what questions to ask, who to trust. And that type of thing. So after leaving her, I just decided that I would do a little research and see how many other women were out there like that. And sure enough, I found out that there were many, who had not been exposed to investing and who weren't comfortable going to an advisor. They didn't know what questions to ask, who to trust, or even how to get started. So that's kind of the genesis of where the book came from. Now, just to give you a little history about the name, initially, the book was going to be called A Gift to My Sister, because she was the genesis of the book. And I continued to do research and interview many women. I mean, I literally probably interviewed thousands of women, 100 of which or more. We're actually one-on-one, some like online, and I did some control research using social media. But then I started to name it A Gift to My Sisters, right? Because it was so many other people in the book. So one of the people who helped me with it was this gentleman named John Hayes, who's a pretty well-established author. He's actually the Titus Chair of Palm Beach Atlanta University. So he was helping me, and he's an older white gentleman. And he said, Mark, if you call it that, it sounds a little urban. You know, give it to my sister. And I said, okay. So I asked a few people, primarily the women who I interviewed, if that was an issue, and they said no. But just because that was out there, you know, I really thought about it. He wanted me to name it like the 10 steps of investing or something like that. And that just seemed a little boring to me. So I named it the gift, the essential guide to women in investing. So I kept the gift part, but I left out the sisters part. And the good news is it manifested itself in many ways, as you both stated. Some people took the gift and they gave it as a gift. And some people said, thank you for sharing your gift. So, I mean, it just continued to manifest itself. And if you look at the cover, it's a box full of money and it's a gift. And some women said, hey, we like gifts and we like money. And you show us a box of money with a gift, of course we're going to get the book. So it worked out pretty well. But my sister was the genesis of this idea.
But I mean, I'm glad you shared the story because I don't know what woman, especially anyone listening right now, that wouldn't imagine not being happy to get a wrapped box with a bowl full of money. I think that's what I aspired to. But I do want to take you to, for some of the people that don't know what the book is about and the style of the book, share at least one story that really spoke out to you or is coming to mind right now about one of the women interviewed and decided to feature in your book.
Well, the story that sticks out the most, and you know, the purpose of writing it in that fashion was to try to help the ladies identify perhaps their situation. Because a lot of times people don't know why they should invest or why they should take care of their money, or maybe they just didn't know. So I wanted to share stories and people could find themselves in those stories, and hopefully that would guide them toward you know what to do. And as you know, since you've seen the book, at the end of every chapter, we talk about a lady and her story, and I make recommendations on how they could change the situation. The one story that really sticks out to me is the one that was the most tragic. And, as you mentioned, it's different sections based on marital status. And this particular chapter is on widows. And this particular lady was a secretary, and her husband was basically a maintenance worker. So they were just two happy people. They were childhood sweethearts. They had dated pretty much their whole life. They got married, and they had a child. And all this happened by the time they were like 25 years old. So surprisingly, he got sick, and he died at 27 years old. And this lady who really wasn't really a career person. She never had plans on sustaining herself or taking care of herself and her family. But all of a sudden, you got this 27-year-old woman who has a 2-year-old baby, and she's single, and well, not single, but widowed, and her one of her major sources of revenue, which is her husband, is gone. So one of the investments that a lot of people don't really think of as an investment was life insurance. Okay, so this couple at 25 years old could have got a half a million dollar life insurance policy for probably $25 a month or less. And that simple oversight left her in a very, very challenging situation for the rest of her life. The other thing that they had not done was to begin to save, or they had not gotten to their 401k at their job, and had not begun to generate savings that would have helped her out as she went through this process. So it's really about setting the foundation, first of all, by making sure that everything that you have is properly insured, because you want your house, your car, your life. You know, you need all of that foundationally, and then you need to start investing. So this lady literally struggled her entire life based on a an investment in a life insurance policy, which may have been $25 a month. So it seems like that, and as she went through life, I mean, she made some other choices. Again, never really setting up any substantial savings. She actually bought a house, which turned out to be a money pit. And again, having no savings, having no investment, she wasn't in a position to fix the house up. So it was really one of the key things that you must do in investing is you have to plan. You have to think about your life. You have to think about what you want to do. And then you need to set aside and figure out what investments will serve you to get to where you want to go. So without that plan and without that structure, she literally struggled most of her life. Now, the good news is she's fine now. And right now, she's probably 50, and her son is a grown man, and he's doing well. And she's 50 now. She has no children, no house, and all that. So she's in a great place to pack a lot of money away and still, survive through retirement. So that story and so many others point out the importance of planning and managing your money.
What's been talking about stories, one of my favorites was the one about the divorcee and what happened with that. And I'm not sure if you had another one, but again, to all of our listeners, if you just joined us, we're talking with Mark Park, CPA and also MBA, and the book you wrote, a wonderful gift called The Gift. So, Mark, can you just take us back for a second and just share with us the story about divorcee? And as I only said earlier, but I don't think I've ever read a book like this where there's something for everybody, the way you lay the book out. You know, if you're married, if you're single, whatever your choices are, it's there. You're finding yourself in there. So, can you share that story with me?
You remember which divorcee you're talking about?
The one where the guy had all the stuff, and the lady didn't realize that she had nothing, basically, at the end.
So this is a story, and this guy is a Harvard-educated lawyer, and they live in an upscale neighborhood. They're entire life. I mean, they put two children through Ivy League schools, and at probably 60, 65, this guy had ran for office, a public office, and he was exposed because he hadn't paid his taxes. And because of that, his wife started asking questions, found out that they were a few steps away from foreclosure. They hadn't paid their taxes, and they had nothing after 32 years of marriage. And the bottom line is they ended up getting divorced, and she actually was so upset that she moved to Spain. So one of the lessons is, and this is for, whether you're the woman or the man in the relationship, is if you have investment that you share as a married couple, you have to be diligent enough to make sure that you are sitting down at the table with the investment advisor. You know, even if you don't understand investments and how the portfolio works, just you sitting there will make them be at least accountable so that you know where your money is. So that story was very tragic. And, this guy ended up losing his house after you don't have to live there for 30 years. So, again, it's about planning, being diligent, and making sure that you have money set aside to take care of your needs.
Yeah, I think one of the
key words
you said was accountability. And I think that starts early with education. And I talked previously about the fact that, we're volunteering for that investing, which is an investment organization. But when you think about the education side, do you have any suggestions or ideas where people can go in terms of some of the research that you've done?
Okay, so your club is actually one of the better ones that I've heard of. to get that information, because it's volunteer and it's not, you know, based on somebody trying to sell you something. Certainly a great place to go is to the library. I mean, there's a ton of information there. You could go to the FINRA site. You could go to the Financial Regulatory Agency. It's called FINRA, or the SEC site. So there's just a ton of information out there for you to go to. And of course, buy my book. And it's got a lot of resources in there and some instructions on how you could find different information and where to go and resources and vocabulary and terminology and all that stuff that you need to know. There's a lot of places. One of the things people can do, and they can always get a financial advisor, but you want to do some research, you want to have recommendations, you want to feel that person. It's like your doctor. I mean, if you're not feeling that person and you feel like they're kind of shady, they may be. So you just want to, do some investigation, get some referrals, and do your own research first so that you kind of have a basis for coming in and understanding what you're talking about.
Yeah, I asked that question because I really want to talk a little bit about our South Florida chapter of Better Investing because we do volunteer. I am the vice president, and we are very big on education. And our chapter particularly covers Gold Coast and the Treasure Coast of the state of Florida. And currently, a lot of our meetings naturally are online. So if you're really interested in investment education, join us. But I always like to give honor and respect to Dean and Jaeger, which is a part of that board, and volunteers also, because we also have an initiative that we started called Financial Empowerment. And this program that you're listening to tonight or today is a part of our Financial Empowerment Education information that we share. And so I'd like to also talk about the fact that we're not financial advisors or anything like that. We don't day trade. We're not selling any products or services. We are here as volunteers, sharing this information, and not giving any stock to the things like that. Our goal is really to encourage each of you, along with family and friends, one, to consider getting a starting investment club. Consider, and I've brought our magazine, this is my magazine, which is a rough ride, and everybody, with the education, realizing that there are a lot of stocks that companies that you use that are on sale right now. But if you understand how to evaluate value and things like that. So again, just wanted to share a little bit about the organization, and then I'll turn the program back over to you, Mike.
Well, earlier this week, Mark, I came across PBS, actually, I say it's new because I just found out about it about two days ago, but they have this series called TWO and then CENTS. And it's very interesting because it's like financial adult videos under 10 minutes. Financial Adult Videos Under 10 Minutes, Financial Education Video for Adults. And in it, they mentioned, did 2015 Fidelity study that was done entitled Money Fit Women Study. And basically, one of the most interesting things that I had read, and it just reiterates the research and interviews that you've done, is that women who are confident, well, it seems that, based on the survey, a lot of women are comfortable with money when it comes to spending. versus when it comes to planning for the future. So based on, I think, maybe 1,500 women that they interviewed, they were saying that 79% of women felt very confident about balancing the checkbook. 72% felt very confident about managing and balancing the family budget. But only 37% felt confident about planning for financial retirement needs, and only 28% felt confident about actually choosing or investing in the right financial security. So was that a similar thing that you got when you were doing your interviews?
Well, first of all, I wanted to kind of give a shout out to your group because I looked at this Better Investing organization, and one of the things that I really liked, and this is exactly what Anne talked about, is the holistic approach. Because you don't just talk about, you know, it's not stock picking, and it's not, you know, day trading and all these very volatile moves. It's really about educating people on how to be totally financially sound, because you actually talk about budgeting and debt, and you have all these concepts in there. And I always tell people, you need to be financially very strong with the fundamentals, and then you start to invest, because otherwise you get in a situation where you start using the money that you invest for your needs. So I really like that approach. Now to your question about the study, absolutely. Now, one of the things that was in that study that I think was interesting, maybe you'll find interesting, is that even though women are less likely to invest and understand all that, the ones who do actually have better results than men. I don't know if you saw that in the study. But,
that's not in the study, but it is in the study that Better Investing has done. Women Investment Club outperform Men Investment Club and Mixed Investment Club, both male and female, outperform both genders. But being a Better Investing member, that is one of the interesting things. We end up being more long-term thinkers, more balanced, than men who end up being investors. But go ahead.
And part of it is exactly what you're doing right here is, and I don't stereotype, but this is from the research as well, women tend to go out and get educated first. They don't come on meetings like this. They read books. They talk to people, and then they invest. Men tend to, you know, again, I hate stereotype, but they tend to
jump in.
We just know. Because we're men.
So they do that.
And then men also tend to trade more, and not have a diverse, balanced portfolio. And when I say that, they typically recommend, it's been something they recommended for many years, that you maybe have 60-40. Or 80-20. So you have stocks, which are a little more aggressive, and then you have a portion of your investment portfolio that's bonds. So you have some balance because they have an inverse relationship. So if one goes down, then the other one should be going up. But men, based on the research, will have all stocks, and then they'll switch over to all bonds. So they're making these moves, and every time they make a move, it's costing them money, too, because there's cost to trade. So, that's part of the research. But to your point, what I found out is that, first of all, the country is still developing, right? So women are, more so in the workforce than they were, ever before. So women are doing everything, but for many years, women were basically not really given the opportunity to invest. And in my research and talking to some of these young ladies, they would tell me that their fathers would tell them how to invest. They said they would teach their sons, but they wouldn't teach them. The number of women in that situation was very surprising to me because, they would say that I would ask my father to show me, and he wouldn't show me, he would just do it for me. So that's kind of like the old school thinking, on how to transfer that knowledge. And then there's also a set of women who, and some of them weren't really proud of this statement, but they always believed that a man was going to come in and do it for them.
Of course.
Because
that's how
they
get married.
That's how they get married.
Take care of
it.
And make those decisions for us.
Yeah, so the research does show that, you know, the women are less likely, but I feel kind of proud because of the book that I've written, the conversation has changed, you know, with some of the women who I've been dealing with for many years. And now all of a sudden they're starting to talk about investing. They're starting to talk about the stock market. And they're, you know, they're really starting to talk about their money management, asking questions, and, you know, really getting involved. And part of it is because, and it's very important, because at some point most women are going to be in charge of their finances, whether they're straight out of college or whether they get divorced or whether they're widowed. I mean, so it's just so many situations where they may be in charge of the money, or they just may be like my mother-in-law, who her husband came home for 50 years, took his $100, gave her the check, and she did everything else. So to give those ladies better solutions to grow their money, and it is a winning situation. Because as you know, right now you got a savings account, you're getting zero, right? The same money you could put somewhere in the stock market, even if you're investing in mutual funds, and outperform what you're going to do in the savings account. So it's very important that knowledge is shared and passed down, and continue to communicate.
Now, I would like to add on to that and just say outperform very easily without any additional knowledge or experience, because the same way you can just make a deposit into a bank account, you can make the same action is just making a deposit into an investment account, buying a mutual fund or whatever it is, and just letting it sit there like you would have in the bank, and it's just going to end up giving you more. But I do want to ask this question, and then this question is from Cindy, who read your book, in the last year and earlier this year, and she's asking, what is the advice for those who are
buying without IONI?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. What is your, she's saying there's a lot of advice and suggestions concerning the 401k. Any advice for those of us that have 403b?
Okay. Yeah, so 403b, that means that you work probably for an educational institution. Or a nonprofit. So that's really like a 401k, but it's just a different entity. So my recommendation for those always is, if you work with the organization that is matching you, that you at minimum contribute up to that match. But the reality is, you should pack as much money into those instruments as possible, because those will be less expensive than any options that you'll find on the street. And typically the organization, I mean, make sure you work for a sound organization, but again, normally 403Bs might be a school or a nonprofit. They vet the people who bring investments into your organization, so you can feel pretty sound with all of the stuff that's incorporated into that 403B. So I definitely recommend that you do that. And one of the other very important parts is for savings. I mean, normally 403Bs, 401Ks are coming directly from your paycheck before you get it. And that is a winning situation for most people, because a lot of people don't have the discipline to start saving yourself. So if they get that poor saving going on and they're not touching that money, they will end up with significant savings in the long term.
So are you saying go to the payroll department and say, hey, I want to contribute pre-tax dollars and I want it to be invested automatically before it hit my paycheck.
Exactly. So, yeah, just to talk about forced savings, so with 403Bs and 401Ks, typically, you know, maybe as soon as orientation, they give you a packet and they give you potential investments that you can invest in, and you have a choice sometimes. 403Bs, sometimes they take out a fixed amount, but they take it out right out of your paycheck before you get it, and as you mentioned, I only get it as pre-tax. Pre-tax. So that means that if you make $50,000 a year and they take out $10,000 for your 403B, you will only pay income taxes on that $50,000 because of that savings that you put into your 403B. Forced savings, or basically paying yourself first, is very important. Everybody needs to learn that if you are not saving right now, you need to develop the mindset, whether it's coming directly from your checking account or from your paycheck, but you need to develop a habit of saving or investing some money every time you get some first. Pay yourself first, and then you will accumulate money year after year, and at one point you'll be very happy that you made those decisions.
So one of my favorite books to recommend is called The Automatic Millionaire. And the reason I recommend that book is because even if you don't finish it, if you at least start it, you will meet a couple that did the forced savings, set up themselves for automatic success by doing pre-tax contributions into their retirement plan. Versus their friends that they went to dinner with, and an adjacent couple that they went to dinner with and cruises with, and you know, things you do as a married couple. But that difference in what you do or what you set up for yourself automatically makes a huge difference when it comes time for retirement. And one of the things that I like to give people a history lesson. United States government didn't always want you to take taxes out of your paycheck. I don't know if you probably know this, Mark. But this is like a 50, 60 year recent phenomenon. The reason they now take it out of your paycheck is because when they would give people their tax bill at the end of the year, most people could not pay it. So then they said, well, we're not going to make it a choice. We're just going to automatically take our portion out every time you get paid. And if we happen to take out too much, then we will send you a refund. And I think that is what we, if you are serious about planning for your future and saving things for yourself, I think that just like you don't have a say about how much your taxes are, you just live with the rest. You seem to make do with the rest, FICA and everybody else. I think that you should do the same for yourself. Make it non-negotiable. And even if you don't have the discipline, you won't need it because it's not a choice. And I think your future self will thank you for it.
Absolutely.
Now, Mark, when you talked about forced savings, what came to my mind was saving on top of the 403B or the 401K, long-term savings, short-term savings, even if it's a $20, $25 pay period that you're not going to touch. So then when you happen to emergency, you don't have to go into that 403B to get that money to repair your car or fix your refrigerator or whatever. You have to go into the 403B to get that money to repair your car or fix your refrigerator or whatever. You have been slowly doing another type of forced savings, if you will, such as a long-term and put those money in maybe two different banks or savings accounts, credit unions. And so those kind of conversations we really not having, when you talk about that investing, and as we begin to learn about the first person to say, I was so, you get back to call myself, but I was so illiterate in regards to saving and investing with two degrees.
Who teaches us this stuff? Yes, we each have a responsibility to learn it, but this is why this program was created.
And we want to encourage you, if you listen to us, you have a question, you have an expert here, that's one of the things that signs that says, the gift. Mark is an expert on the subject. He's done a lot of research. And he's a very humble man. You get to tell that from a smiling head on his face, right? He is so, you know, informed. But I say that, Mark, seriously, because you've done a lot of research and you know. So I just want to make sure, even though we talk about what people should do, I really also want to make sure that we tell them how to. Because I remember sitting on the other side, knowing I needed to do something, but what do we do first? What do we do second? And so I just, you know, we're almost out of time. I really want to just make sure that all our listeners, if you have questions, let us hear from you if you're live in the chat. And then listening on the radio, if you press one on your phone, but if you're listening here with us on Zoom, please put your questions in the chat. All right, back to you, Lainey.
Yes, I do want to follow up on Cindy's question because I want to use the rest of our time to talk steps, action plan. And going back to Cindy's question, I know she didn't put this specifically, but one thing I have realized, especially with 403B plans or people that work for nonprofits or in education institutions, is the confusion around the plan itself. Around the provider, you have all of these choices. You know, you may have a planner that calls you because they just want your account and they don't follow up and they put you in annuity. And, you know, so, and then going back to the study, you know, the study is saying, the fidelity study is saying that 4 out of 5 women feel that they don't have the confidence to even talk about finances to their family and friends. And I know that many people listen to this, I'm going to say, especially women, we don't know what to ask. You know, a lot of us are going to work. We don't know about the retirement plans that our company or our institution is offering us. So what are, let's just say, the first three things that we should be asking, you know, of our employer, of ourselves, of our financial planner, what are those questions that we need to be asking?
Okay, so for me, it tends to continue to go back to the whole plan and, you know, what you see happening in your life. And so you want to know, like, okay, so when are you planning to retire, or are you going to stay in this job for the long term? You need to kind of know what the future, how you would like the future to look. And then you need to understand, first of all, your tolerance for investment. So for those who may not understand the kind of range of investments, there are some very safe investments, which, you know, first of all, a savings account is very safe because you don't lose money. You don't make a whole lot, but you don't lose money. And then you have bonds, which are a little more volatile, but very safe. And then you go into, you know, growth funds, which are the larger companies in America. And then you may go into international investments, which could be very volatile. So you want to know what you're comfortable with. Because if you're in an investment that you're not comfortable with, say, for instance, you're a very conservative person and you invest in an international fund that's so volatile that you lose a bunch of money one day. So that's going to motivate you to take your money out, and you may be so disturbed that you will never invest again. So first of all, you want to know what type of investor you are. Now, the good people in this business, they have what's called a profile. So they'll ask you some questions that should tell them what type of investor you are and what investments you will be comfortable with. So if somebody just recommends an investment for you without asking you any questions, tell them to stop and tell them to tell you why they're asking you to invest in that investment. Because a lot of times that's what happens in those 401k or 403b situations. They'll just say, oh, you just choose this one, because that's what they like. But they need to figure out what type of investor you are, and they should have those questions to ask. And it's typically 3 to 5 questions, no more than 10. And they can kind of gauge what type of investor you are. And then you want to start to develop a portfolio. And when I say that, that is your mix of investments. So you don't necessarily want to have all safe investments. You want to have a mix. You want to have some that are more aggressive, because the more aggressive they are, the more they typically make. So it's high risk, high return, low risk, low return, and everything in the middle. So you want to have a mixture of your investments so that you could maximize your savings. And then you just want to understand the tax implications. So we talk about forced savings or money coming out pre-tax. There's also this relatively new option, which is called a Roth IRA. And that is actually post-tax. So what happens with the pre-tax money is you're not taxed on it as the money grows, but when you retire, you are then taxed. The thought was that you'll make less money when you retire, so paying those taxes then shouldn't be that big of a burden. My research and my experience tells me that's not quite the case, because it's a whole lot of older people. They don't have any children to write off. They don't have any mortgage debt. They don't have any write-offs, and they have maybe a pension or two. And then they get this investment money, and they're getting killed in income taxes. So the Roth IRA
requires minimum distribution.
Right.
So now you've got to pay
that money. So the Roth IRA, which is post-tax, it grows tax-free as well. But when you take it out, there are no taxes. So that may be a better option. So you need to have all those conversations. You need to kind of understand what you want things to look like at the end of the movie, basically.
Okay. So thank you for giving us the few of those questions. Once we've gotten that, and we're going about their lives, and we're just going to work, and trying to make ends meet, and be involved in our family and live our lives, what are some of the other things that you recommend we do? I'm going to say the first one is to get your book and read it. But what are some of the other things that you want to suggest for us to do?
Okay, so I call it a financial house, right? So the first thing that you want to do when you start this process is, as I mentioned earlier, you want to make sure that everything is insured. Because if, for instance, you have a car accident, you have no insurance, then you're going to take a hit financially. So you want to make sure that you pay those premiums and take care of the foundation. Then you want to... You need to get that debt situation taken care of. You want to get out of debt, or you want to start a plan to get yourself out of debt, because if you have credit cards and all that, you're going to pay more in interest than you could make on investment. So you want to take care of the debt. Then, as Ann mentioned, you want to have that emergency fund. You need to have people recommend you have about 6 months of your salary set aside for emergencies. So that when something happens, you don't have to go into your investment. So once you have those three things in place, then you have a strong foundation for moving forward. And then you start to, you want to have your 401k or your 403b. And a lot of jobs have an extra program called a 457, which is voluntary, that you could do that in addition to a 401k. Or 403b, and then you may venture out into the stock market, and you develop a portfolio. And what I recommend in your portfolio is, and this is something I've come across in the comfort realization a little later in life, is you really want to have some investments that are producing dividends. And when we talk about dividends, those are stocks that are paying you part of the profits. Whether it's quarterly, monthly, annually, because that money starts to add back into your investment, and that grows even more. Once you start that, you have your stocks, you have all your foundational things. The other thing, you really need to be in touch with your money, right? So part of the plan is, to know where you are. So the first thing I should have said is you need to know where you are. You need to know what your personal balance sheet looks like. How many assets do you have? How much debt do you have? And at the end of the day, do you have a positive net worth? So assets, what you own, minus what you owe, is your net worth. So you need to know what that number is. And you need to know how the decisions that you make affect your net worth. So if you're, going to buy a house that costs $100,000, you got $100,000 cash, you have your net worth stay the same. You just switch two assets for, one asset for another. But if you buy a house and you get $100,000 mortgage again, you're still in the same place. But if you have a $100,000 house but an $80,000 mortgage, you gain because your asset is more than that debt. So you want to know how network works, and you want to track that. And when you go out there with your credit card and you're about to buy that fancy outfit and all of that, you need to know how it's going to impact you. And what works best for me is for me to have a long-term goal. So I've worked for a very long time, and I want to do this thing called retirement. And when I retire, I don't want to be broke. So every time I'm ready to make a purchase, I think about, I want to retire. So have that goal that you really want to shoot to, know where you are, and make decisions and think about where your money is. Because we need to get rid of this nonsense called the wealth gap. Where people don't have no money. The statistics say that 57% of Americans don't have $1,000. We need to cut that nonsense out. So you got organizations like this Better Investing Group where you can go to it for free and learn how to set up a portfolio, how to invest, how to structure your money, and whether you're scared or not, you need to do it because understand that our parents had this thing called a pension, okay? So in the old days, you work 30 years, and you leave, and you get paid for the rest of your life. We have 401Ks and 403Bs, and a lot of those say if you don't put anything in, you don't get anything out. And a lot of people have not realized that yet. It's going to be a bunch of broke folks walking around, so Yes. And that, this very pandemic speaks to why you need to have your money in order. Because within weeks, and I'm not trying to, talk negatively about people, but within a week or so, there were some people who had no food. So that means that they didn't have savings and, investments in place. And if you're beyond, 25 years old, you should have some money set aside for your emergencies.
I have one more question I want to ask you before we wrap up. The question is, I currently have life insurance with my job. Should I look into purchasing life insurance before I retire?
You should look into purchasing life insurance right away. Because the way life insurance works is the younger you are and the more healthy you are, the better rate you get. The older you get and, if you develop a certain medical situations, you can't get life insurance. So you want to...
But life insurance doesn't help the person that's buying it, does it?
Well, that's a philosophical thing as well. So part of this whole wealth thing is we need, and I don't know if the audience is mixed, but as an African-American person, we need to start developing generational wealth so that, our children don't continue to struggle. And, continue year after year after year, generation after generation, to always be behind the eight ball. So life insurance is a relatively inexpensive way to build an estate. I have a half a million dollar policy I pay $30 a month for, so you know I will be in a position to leave my children a great deal of money and to make their life a little better. So, I mean, you could say no, it's not for me, and at minimum, you need to have enough insurance to bury yourself so you don't burden the people who are left behind. Because now, you know, the new life insurance policy is GoFundMe.
Well, the reason I asked the question is because I think it's important to know why you are doing what. So, you know, if a question is being asked about life insurance, we have to ask that person, do they know what life insurance is? Life insurance is you paying a premium every month for somebody else to be a beneficiary of the money once you die. Because the term in and of itself is an oxymoron. You get payment on the death of the person.
Right.
While the life insurance.
Part of it, though, also, I mean, maybe if you are single with no children, but if you're like a person who has a family, like the couple I talk about, the widow. So here you are, you're a husband, you're 27 years old, and you could potentially leave behind a wife and a child. Now, hopefully, we all want to take care of our children, right? At least till they're the age of majority. So what life insurance does is come in and replace that income that you as the breadwinner would have produced. So again, back to that widow, had that couple had that half a million dollar life insurance policy, which again they could have paid maybe $30 a month, she would have had $500,000 to raise her son and to keep herself sustained for many years. So that's another part of why you have life insurance.
So the person that asked the question said, yes, I'm single with no kids. Do I still need it? And before I let you respond, I think when you say need, based on what he just said, you don't need it. You got to know why you want it. Now, if you want to leave it to your siblings, children, or you want to leave it to your alma mater, or you want to leave it somewhere else to build a certain generational wealth outside of your kids. Maybe yes, you may want it, but based on the situation, you may not need it. We have another quick question about term life versus whole life. Can you speak to that?
Okay, term life is life insurance that just goes for a certain period of term, typically 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And whole life is just what it says. It's life insurance that you pay for your whole life up until age 100. So one of the things that they will suggest when you buy a whole life policy is that part of that is an investment. Term life is just straight life insurance. So what I recommend is term life. And there's a number of reasons why. One, because whole life is quite a bit more expensive. So way back when I was in my 20s, I had a whole life policy with $100,000 worth of coverage, and I was paying $100 a month. I got married, and my wife had life insurance, so we called a guy over, and I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to pay $200 a month for life insurance. I mean, that's not real exciting. You know, the money's a little more tight. Back then, so what happens is people buy these high insurance policies and then they end up canceling and not having life insurance. And I can't tell you how many times I went to a home and somebody said, man, mama spent all the money from the life insurance because what they could do is they could take that money out. They could borrow the money from the life insurance and a lot of times you get to the funeral home and find out that policy that person had is worthless. Term life is strictly insurance. You know what you have. You know, if you get a $100,000 policy, you can't borrow from it or any of that. When you die, you get that $100,000, and it is cheaper. So I always recommend term insurance.
Okay. I think those are all the questions. Thank you so much, Mark. For your time, and thank you for indulging us with our insurance questions, because that is You know, I'm not going to ask my mother to share her story, but one of the things I learned is ignorance is expensive. And with insurance, my limited knowledge is if you miss a payment, if you miss a few payments, depending on the type of insurance you get, you may not get anything back. You may have just lost that whole thing.
I don't think you will. I'm just saying, again, I don't know which insurance.
What type of insurance does that? You know, is it both term and whole? You know, what happens when you lose your job and you don't have income? All that you just made, you know, the investments you made into that insurance, is it now lost because you can't make your payments?
It could be in both situations. But some policies have riders. Yeah, they have riders where if you lose your job or you miss a premium, they have a rider where it'll pay it until, you know, maybe for a year or so, you know, just so you won't lose your insurance.
And that leaves me with this. Outside of your book, is there anything else, any other books we may need to read or outside of Better Investing, any other places that you're aware of where we can start to educate ourselves on these options? Because, you know, if you're not from Florida, you may not know the store, but this store called Sims that sells something like men's men's warehouse. But the tagline for Sims is an educated consumer is our best customer. And I think that's how we have to be with our financial plans, we have to at least educate ourselves enough to know what are the questions to ask. So what are the other resources outside of your book and Better Investing that you would direct us to?
Well, again, as far as books, one of the things I found a lot of books is a lot of them don't go into some of the details on how you have to do it. A lot of them kind of build you up, you know, to get you to another place. But there's a very old book, The Richest Man in Babylon. And really, it is not really about how to invest and how to buy insurance, but what it is it's very old. And what it'll tell you is the principles. If you do these things, you will set yourself up to be financially sound. So, I mean, I think that book is a good basis because it makes it very simple because it's, you know, like hundreds of years ago. And it talks about...
I think the author of the Clayton series, George Clayton. We've read that, and you're absolutely right. But it is still, it's a timeless piece.
Yeah, and that's, so, you know, I applaud you all for what you're doing because all of this stuff is out there. It's well known, and there's a lot of different outlets. We have to outreach. And, you know, my experience tells me that, I mean, just to tell you a story, all of my good friends, most, have done no investing with me. They didn't follow my advice. And now all of their children come to me. They sent their children. They didn't follow it. But, I mean, all of their kids, they come to me. They call me. One called me the other day, you know, asked me about this option trading thing that she was doing. So they call me all the time. So they heard me, but they didn't follow. But they understand. So it's like a fight. I mean, we have to bring people into the fold, and we have to change their thinking because we've been taught so many things. So many things that are not correct because anybody can build wealth. I don't care how much money you make, and you can make a lot of money and still be broke. So it's really about that discipline and the knowledge. So, again, Rich Man in Babylon, really old, but you'll read it, and it just makes sense. And it's the same stuff that we're talking about here today.
But thank you so much, Mark. I just want to recap a little bit. Outside of the questions that you suggested that we ask, and thank you for those, knowing what type of investor we are, knowing what our risk tolerance is, knowing what or thinking about what our future looks like and what we want it to look like, so that we can get do the things and invest in the things that would help us to get there. But a few things I also want to recap is building your financial house. Number one, knowing your expenses and staying within your income. Number two, getting out of debt, setting up your emergency fund so that you can have some cushion while you live. Developing an investment portfolio, and underneath that, one of the most important things in investment strategy is make sure you get into some dividend stocks. And I'm just going to leave by saying, you know, if you pay a utility bill, find out if that utility company is public and invest in that, because utility companies are one of the most dividend-rich stocks or publicly traded companies that you could invest in, and you're already a consumer. But ultimately, know where you are financially. And when you said that, it made me think about the Safe Sex campaign. Get tested, right? You said know your status, and we're really familiar with that phrase, but we know it in a different context. So I'm going to bring it into the financial context. Get tested, know where you stand. Before you get involved with anybody else, know where you stand, know what you have, know what you don't have, know what you owe, because ultimately you want to be safe, you want to be successful, you want to be not only financially free, but very wealthy. So do you have any closing remarks, Mark?
Again, just want to, you know, give you guys a shout-out for what you're doing. Of course, I want you all to buy the book. And, you have my website, you have my email. If you ever have any questions, I'm always willing to share. My whole goal in life now is to help more people get themselves into a position of wealth. I mean, that is just my function. That's my last, or maybe not be my last hurrah, but it's my current hurrah. And so that's it.
Now, I have a challenge for you. The last time we talked, I asked you if you were considering doing a book club for the book. Any updates on that question?
I could certainly do that, yeah.
I would like to suggest you may want to consider giving people a platform to have a dialogue. And I will go even further and suggest, if you have not done so, you may want to create a community on Facebook and give people a place to come and dialogue about the book.
So you are actually right on point. I am in the process of doing that. My new focus, and it's based on a lot of things that have happened recently, the whole George Floyd thing, is to get people out of this quote-unquote wealth gap, because a lot of things can be solved by having some money. I mean, you know, healthcare, education, prosperity. I mean, so, you know, a lot of these guys get in trouble because they're doing a little petty crime, but if they had some resources, then they might not have been in that position. So I can't remember what scripture it is, but I know it's one that says money answers all things. So to have some money will help you out. So a lot of people can do a lot of things. I mean, they ran on social media, or, you know, you have your politicians, and you have all kinds of people. I kind of understand money. So I'm just going to take that gift and try to share it, and that's going to be my purpose for the rest of my life. So I would like to help as many people as possible get to a point where money is not an object, and I will tell you it's not impossible. But you do need to get started right now.
Yes, I will also send you another challenge. Can I speak to Pioneer McNeil, who's our leader in Better Investing, as our vice president of our chapter? But I think it would be great for us to create some kind of strategic partnership with you because education is the key.
Mm-hmm.
And what we like to do is serve as a funnel for your education piece. So as people are reading the book and really realizing the stories can relate to their own story, then where do they go for the education? And so we have thousands of volunteers all over the U.S., like Guyoni and I, and just really good-hearted people that want to help. A lot of the information is online, the classes, and the Nayoli. I'm not sure she's going to talk about her model investment club before we wrap up. And but the point is this, to be able to start that online Facebook group and give people the places to come and have a conversation about the book, Q&A, go back and do some research on what and what are you doing, have some action steps. One of those action steps can also be the possibility of creating an investment club where they come in and learn and can use the book as a tool
right.
in terms of what do I do next. But where can I get the support? And that's the conversation and collaboration that we're aspiring to create as a part of this conversation as we come on every Wednesday and share my investing story. So, Ione and Mr. Parks, if you have any other comments, because we did go over a little bit, but we've just been sharing with all of our listeners and everybody, please reach out to Mr. Parks. And please buy the book, an excellent book, excellent gift. You should buy two, one for you and one for a friend, male or female. So it works. It works.
Thank you.
All right, so we can wrap up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Marks, for your time. We really appreciate it. That's all I have.
All right. Any other comments, Mark, before we go, Mr. Parks?
Again, just thank you to you and the baby billionaire.
All right, everybody. We will see all of you next week, same place, same time. And as we say, every week we will have a special guest, but you must be here to hear. All right? See you.
All right. See you.
All right, bye-bye.
Goodbye.